where nobody knows your name is not filmed in front of a live studio audience. Hello and welcome to Where Nobody Knows Your Name Cheers podcast. I'm James.
And I'm Barry.
And that's Barry. We're going to be talking to you about Season 10, Episode 6, Unplanned Parenthood.
Yeah. Good fun, this one.
It is a fun one. Yeah. Farcical, would you say?
Yeah, a little. Certainly, it doesn't try and pack any emotional punches in. It's just good fun.
Yeah. It aired on October 24th, 1991. It was written by Dan Staley and Rob Long and directed by James Burrows. Old hands here. Old hands at the old Cheers. How does it start?
Well, it starts really nicely.
Yeah.
It's an insight into Carla when no one else is around.
Yes, very much so.
We catch Carla opening up the bar. She's on her own. She puts the jukebox on and has a good old dance. A real sort of flash dance moment.
Does a nice little acrobatic thing with the chair.
Yeah, that was a nice move.
Yeah, the song is I Got the Sun in the Morning by Doris Day.
It's a lovely,
upbeat ditty, you could say.
But the moment that Rebecca and Woody enter the bar, she shuts it down and goes back to her usual sarky, snipey self.
The exact exchange is good morning, Carla, and her going, yeah, what's so good about it?
Nice to know that Carla has a positive and upbeat side to her when no one's looking.
Well, I think, you know, she puts up that facade so as to, you know, not let people get too close, Barry, because then they could hurt her.
Yeah, could marry her or give her more kids.
Yeah, whoosh. That's relevant, though.
It is relevant, yeah. But we shall come to that. So how does our episode start fully, James?
Cliff enters and gives Woody his video camera. Even the case for the camera confuses poor Woody there.
Yeah, a bit too technical. I mean, they weren't readily available then. My parents often bemoan the fact that they couldn't have videos of us as kids because they didn't have a video camera and didn't have access to one.
Yeah.
So we're very lucky these days, but perhaps we film a little too much.
Well, you and I have complained about the advent of mobile technology, you know. My uncle is currently in the process of digitizing all the tapes that we have of us growing up, you see.
Oh, that's lovely.
It is nice. It's a long process, though.
I can imagine.
My grandparents had many videotapes, either of us, or they would like videotape the Clangers or Bagpuss or something off the TV, you know.
We had a VHS that just had the words Kevy Baby on the side. It was a Kevin Costner American football film. My mum had a bit of a crush on him.
I don't know what that film would be. Answers on a postcard, please. Then why does Woody want a video camera?
Well, his parents live a long way away, and he wants them to meet his girlfriend and family. So that he says the best way for them to do that in person is by video.
Yeah, because he can't afford to buy a plane ticket for Kelly there. Which, fair, you know, send a video, fine.
Kelly could probably...
She can buy her own plane ticket.
Yeah.
But I have learned enough in my years on this earth to go to your partner. Right, now you buy your own. It's unprompted. It cannot be taken well.
No, that can wait till 10 years down the line when you're linked without recourse. So there's a nice little line in here where Cliff tries to teach him about white balance.
What's that?
Well, the tape might be a little tinted, so you got to balance it out by pointing the lens at a flat white surface.
Hey, Lilith, we were just talking about you.
Carla, I'm long past caring what anyone in this bar has to say about me.
Rebecca, meanwhile, is upset because Sam wants their hypothetical child to have his last name, despite her being the one who will gain weight and vomit and all the other things that come with being pregnant.
Yeah. And actually, Sam makes a pretty good case for his name being the one.
Because of heritage.
Yeah, it's a really sort of heartfelt story about his granddad.
Didn't people make fun of your name?
Yes, but that was in the context of making fun of many other things. And what makes your name so special?
I'll tell you why. Because Malone is a very proud old Irish name. When my great-grandfather came from County Cork to this city, they actually had signs in some of the windows that said, "No Irish need apply." His friends told him to change his name to Smith or something, but he wouldn't do it. He was proud of his name. When we have a kid, I want him to be proud of his name too.
Rebecca looks like she might have fell for it, but there's a lovely, typical Rebecca response of, nah, and off she goes.
Sam also thinks that Rebecca's surname is less a name and more a question. Again, yeah. Got a point.
Yeah.
But usually, and this is based on, again, the observation of the people I know and in pop culture, when the parents are unmarried, the child's name tends to have their mother's surname. Tends to be the case. Doesn't mean there's a rule that it has to be that, but it does tend to be the case from what I've seen.
Yeah, well, I'm in that exact position. We had long conversations about which way it should go. Not with any, you know, there wasn't much disagreement there. We both eventually settled on my surname, and we had reasons for that. But it was a good sort of joint decision, really.
And that's the way it should be. You don't want to disagree about these sort of things.
No, of course. And also, you don't want one person dictating, which I think was what Rebecca was worried about here.
Yeah.
But Sam does have good reasons, I think. But there's another way around this. And Woody suggests, why not just get married?
Yeah. For some reason, Sam and Rebecca are shocked by this suggestion.
Sam more so. Sam still clings to that bachelor lifestyle like it's a cliff edge that he's hanging onto.
Most of the gang, though, in Cheers, does agree that they should get married because they think it irresponsible. And this was 1991, and I think attitudes have changed over the years, so they're not as forthright necessarily. Most people, I'd assume, tend to live and let live. It's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Phil calls them freaks.
That's a good strong opinion from Phil.
Go to California, you freaks. Fraser's opinions aren't as strong, but he does think that because of who they are individually, they wouldn't be responsible parents.
You can see the build-up of stress as he describes the 24/7 demands of parenting and repeatedly calls to the bar for a whiskey, making him more and more angry. As someone who's got a young child, and mine's, I think, quite a good one in terms of requirements and behaviour, but it's exhausting. It is, and any parent will tell you the same. It's become clear to me recently from conversation with my dad and other older family members that they don't remember the bad stuff. My dad says, oh, yeah, you never cried. And I know that's a lie.
And to this day, you never have.
Yeah.
I think my parents have openly told me that that was difficult at times. You know, overall positive, but at times difficult.
They've got it all on video, James. Yeah. That's why.
They've got the receipts. I appreciate the honesty, you know, prepares for any children I might have. I know that they'll be difficult. It's hereditary, you know.
Lilith suggests that in order to test whether they are good parents, she says, why don't they babysit Freddie, their child, for a night? And there's a really sort of maybe of its timeline, but it did make me chuckle, the wording of it, where she says that to babysit, to give them a break from Freddie and also give Frasier a break from that 16-year-old bundle of breasts that Frasier thinks is God's gift to babysitting. There's obviously a creepy element to that, but I like the wording. It's a good collection of words.
Assonance, isn't it? The similar sound, not alliteration. That's the same sound at the start of words, but like bells knelling is assonance.
Mm.
Bundle of breasts. Well, there's also alliteration.
It also is, yeah. They've ticked off every box there. But Freddie has a very full itinerary.
He's a busy boy.
He is.
No time for Sam or Rebecca.
I can't say that my son's life is filled in that way.
Coincidentally, also called Freddie.
Yeah. I wonder which was named after which. In fact, neither. I don't know where we got the name Freddie, to be honest.
It's not an uncommon name.
No, it's one of these ones that's becoming more popular. And as I've found for both humans and dogs, because I hear it awful lot down the park, human names have become much more of a dog thing recently.
I was going to say, even when I was growing up, Rex is probably the most humanish name, humanoid name that you could give a dog. And even then, Rex is a Latin word for king, so I kind of understood that. But yeah, if you called your dog Dave.
A lot of people do these days. We were in our last house, which was fairly close to a small park. We were repeatedly woken up by a man shouting Graham at the top of his voice.
Graham! Graham! Stop drinking out the toilet!
So, yeah, Freddie is fully booked. Rebecca says they should try someone else and somehow lands on the conclusion that Carla would be a good idea.
Well, you say somehow. She's the only person who's in the bar that frequently who has children.
She is, but Sam's reaction suggests that that he would never go near that idea.
There was a meeting I had at work once, and it was mostly a new group of people. So we were all introducing ourselves, and someone, bless him, said, "Listen, you know, introduce each other. What are our hobbies, and do you have kids or not?" And you know, and people would be like, "Oh, you know, I like you know, rock climbing. I don't have kids." And it came to me, and in my typical fashion, I went, "I do a podcast on diet, lack kids."
Lack. Yeah, like iron or sunlight. Yeah.
I have a child deficiency.
I'm not sure it would offer the same bodily rewards as those other two things.
But emotionally?
Perhaps.
Perhaps, yeah.
I've certainly cried.
You just needed a child, and that's all it took for you to finally cry. Yeah, as you said, they wanted initially to babysit Freddie because they think that that would prove their parenting skills. Sam is adamant that babysitting Carla's kids wouldn't prove that they could be responsible parents. It just proves that they could survive in the wild. It's a great line.
But Rebecca goes ahead anyway. Asks Carla if they can look after all her kids for the night. Carla can't quite believe it. And actually says a prayer afterwards.
To St. Jude.
The patron saint of lost causes.
Yep.
And I imagine he's very happy about this. Cliff slightly brings her out of her reverie with a cheap pun at the end of it. He just says, "Carla, it looks like you're the same height kneeling down as you are standing up."
Cheap shot there.
Cheap shot, yeah, because it's out of nowhere.
Drive by. Kelly and Woody are trying to film a little video, and I don't think Woody understands editing.
No. Yeah. They think that a good way to edit is just run as quickly as possible between camera and shot.
Yeah. I'll tell you what film. It's a classic film, but I don't like the editing in it. It's Easy Rider.
My dad's favourite film because of the bikes. I don't think there's much more reason.
The transitions between scenes just annoys me. They show you like flashes of whatever the next location is, and then they're there. And it's not done in some kind of avant-garde, trippy way in, say, The Man Who Fell to Earth. It's like the guy looked at the film and just chopped them up like one would chop onions. Just went, "Yep. Oh, I forgot the order of them. Here you go." There's no, I can't figure out the reason to it, and it just annoys me. The rest of the film, very good, but the transitions between scenes, no time for that.
I have little memory of it. My dad probably made me watch it about 10 times when I was a
It's Jack Nicholson's film debut.
Did it have Dennis Hopper in it? Is that
Dennis Hopper is in Easy Rider, yeah.
Yeah.
And Peter Fonda is the other one I'm thinking of.
Ah, one of the Fondas.
Son of Henry and brother of Jane. Is Peter Fonda. She's still going.
Yeah.
Good on you, Jane. Anyway.
I don't know how we got to Easy Rider.
Editing.
Cutting. Editing. Yeah. That's right. So upon seeing Woody and Kelly's equally poor editing attempts, Cliff sidles in with his head full of knowledge and suggests that he could do it for them.
He has a directorial vision.
He does, which is always a worry with Cliff.
Cliff thinks he knows his stuff.
Yeah. And at first, who's to question him? He certainly knew about the camera at the start and how to use it.
Yeah.
And he seems to give off good vibes when he talks about framing and the halos.
Look at us being gold.
Well, this is our... I was going to say it's our bread and butter.
It's our wheelhouse.
Yeah. It's more like... I don't want to talk us up too much. We do this for a living, but we certainly don't make Hollywood movies.
No, we don't. We don't even watch them for a living. We make stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So we have one toe in that exciting pool.
We have one toe in that ocean.
In the shallow end.
Yeah.
So yeah, Cliff is now in charge.
In his directing, he reminds Woody of how much Woody misses his parents. And, you know, he says, for this message home, you need to show that emotion. You know, you came to this big city all alone, to leaving your family behind, never knowing when you'll see them again.
And that emotion comes out, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And in that sense, Cliff's doing a good job, but maybe not the job that was required.
No. It's was it Kubrick who was notorious for harassing and bullying his cast?
Well, is that the answer to your quiz question later?
No. It's not one of my trivia questions. Because I know Shelley Duvall basically retired after The Shining because she was scarred for it.
Yeah. Which isn't okay.
You said that as though it was a question.
Yeah. But only because I know little about the...
Oh, I see.
The trials she went through.
Yeah. After Cliff goes, yes, brilliant take, we go to Carla's house. Mm-hmm. And at Carla's house, Carla makes Rebecca sign a standard release form for insurance purposes.
Yeah. A good start. And then the children are brought in. And actually, I was almost disappointed to see them.
I bet a lot of Cheers characters are.
Because this children and family live in such legend in Cheers. And I know that the children have made appearances in other, you know, in other forms throughout the series. But seeing them in their natural habitat after hearing so many stories, they hold a lot of weight, and whether they can live up to that. I have to say, the episode did it really well, and certainly the moments where they say, kind of allude to what was actually done to them is really good, but it's hard to pull that off in the scenes where the kids are there. By actually presenting them as reasonably nice in the scenes we see them, it almost adds a bit of tension because you know they're going to do something terrible.
Ticking time bomb. Yeah. Mm. It's the first episode to feature more than one of Carla's children at one time in speaking roles. There was one early episode which included a cutaway of a few seconds of her kids attacking an adult. But obviously they weren't speaking then.
I thought it was a potentially risky move to show them because you suddenly reveal the legend. But I actually really enjoyed the episode, and particularly some of Rebecca's reactions to things. She really does that well, that sort of switch between different emotions.
Yeah. And while they're here, should we list the cast of this episode?
I think that's a good time to do it.
Jackie Swanson as Kelly Gaines. Leia Remini as Serafina Tortelli. She has also been in Who's the Boss, Saved by the Bell, Blossom, Renegade, Diagnosis Murder, Friends, Glory Days, NYPD Blue, Fat Actress, The King of Queens, Phineas and Ferb, Kevin Can Wait, and many more. Josh Lozoff as Gino Tortelli. Jared Lennon as Ludlow Tortelli. Philip Pullman as Phil. Paul Crapence as Paul. Risa Littman as Anne Marie Tortelli. She was also in The Wonder Years, 30-something, Last Breeze of Summer, Brooklyn Bridge, and more. Thomas Tulak as Jesse LeBeck. He was also in Hook, Mad About You, Chronicles of the Dragon, and more. Danny Kramer as Elvis LeBeck. He also appeared in Knocking at Heaven's Door, One Good Cop, and Frogs. Sabrina Weiner as Lucinda Tortelli. She was also in The Facts of Life, Beverly Hills, 90210, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, Empty Nest, and many more. It's interesting that all of the children here took their father's surname except Ludlow, whose first name is his father's surname. Interesting.
Oh, yeah. It's very strange. So we have all the children lined up, ready to go. And actually at this point, Rebecca is naively excited, thinking that she's going to have the perfect family evening.
It's a Von Trapp!
Yeah. She says she thinks it's going to be like The Sound of Music, doesn't she? And she tries to get them to sound off one by one as she blows a whistle.
It's like The Sound of Music if the music was thrash metal.
It works for the first one. She blows a whistle and Serafina.
Yeah.
She announces that she's not staying. She's going to go sleep at her boyfriend's house and promptly knocks the whistle straight into Rebecca's mouth.
To Gino, though, good on Gino, he responds quite quickly.
He does. He gives her a good hard slap on the back and out it comes. Obviously, part of their routine. They've done this before.
Yeah.
It seems they managed to convince Serafina to stay at least momentarily as they're all having dinner next.
Yeah. Anne-Marie has put Sam's trousers in the oven.
Yeah. A good prank.
Yeah.
Serafina reveals that her boyfriend is a retired cop, which is very worrying.
Yeah, that's a joke which isn't aged too well, I guess.
No.
And Lud has lost his 8-foot boa constrictor, Mr. Tibbington.
Yes. Which, you know, is not a pleasant thought. I don't mind snakes at all, but I'm sure an 8-foot boa constrictor wouldn't be the best thing to sneak up on you in the night.
I assume a boa constrictor, by the name, is one of the ones which could kill you, but by squeezing, not by venom.
Yeah, that's right.
8 foot. I don't think I could. I don't think I'd win that fight. Aren't they surprisingly dense snakes?
They're heavy. Yeah, they're heavier than you think. My little Freddy has held a snake. That was one of his memories earlier this year. We went to a zoo and there was a lady walking around with one. So we're like, well, put it on my baby.
Did he have a good time?
Oh, he loved it. Yeah.
Oh. There was a snake which went into my sister's gym once. So she just went to the reception and went, yeah, snakes on the machine. I like to think the snake was just on the treadmill.
Yeah. Well, which machine would a snake use?
Treadmill, I think. I don't think it's lifting weights. I bet you're wondering, Barry, where Anthony Tortelli is.
Well, we do get a clue, don't we?
He's out doing something.
Yeah, time.
Classic Anthony Tortelli. What are you like? Classic Tony T.
Mm-hmm. So the snake does turn up, which ends our dinner scene.
He's playing footsie with Rebecca.
Yeah. And that's rather pleasant. Maybe it was trying to trip her up, but didn't understand how chairs work. But he knows what Rebecca's leg is, and that's a tasty snack. It appears that he doesn't get that snack because we see Rebecca again later. But first, we head back to the bar.
Norm and Paul are trying to find someone else to live vicariously through because Sam is, you know, trying to have a child with Rebecca, so he's not giving them their usual flights of fancy, you could say.
Yeah, there's a distinct lack of voyeurism to be had.
Good word, good word.
So they try a few other people, don't they?
Try talking to Woody. Woody is not giving them the excitement they want.
Woody is pure wholesome.
So they try Phil instead. And Phil, oh, I'll tell you what, Barry, Phil's got some new pants.
Oh, those slacks.
He's a pants-wearing guy.
I bet those slacks have seen some sights.
Phil is a madman. Phil the lad.
They're bored, basically.
Carla, of course she's got the night off, she's going for a bit of R&R at the Ritz, isn't she?
Yeah, but R&R isn't what you think it is.
No, no.
R&R is two guys called Roy and Ralph, and that's a great line.
It is.
And this was one of my favourite moments of the episode. Frasier, he asks Lilith if she remembers their night in the hotel that Carla is staying at.
How do you intend to spend your night of freedom?
Nothing special. I'm going to check into the Ritz for a night of R&R. Oh.
Sounds nice.
Yeah, I think so. I know Roy and Ralph are looking forward to it.
Remember the Ritz-Carlton, darling? A night of unbridled passion that remains unmatched to this day.
We've never been to the Ritz-Carlton.
Did I say the Ritz-Carlton? I meant the Four Seasons.
Strike two.
So, did you get a load of Phil's new pants? Older fella like that, you know, you wouldn't think he'd be able to get away with, you know, still looking good in a pair of slacks, but darn if he doesn't pull it off. Lilith, please blink.
There's not really an easy way out of that. particularly after you said an unparalleled night of passion.
Yeah. And he tries to redeem himself and fails again.
Naming a different hotel.
Yeah. And then pleads with Lilith to blink.
If a snake doesn't blink, you know it's trying to kill you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good segue, James. Yeah. Very good.
Because at Carla's house, we get, as you say, a recap of some of the pranks that have been done.
Yeah. And there's some good stuff in there.
The old dead rat in the bun gag.
Rebecca was glued into the dryer.
How big is their dryer? Because she's quite a tall woman, Rebecca.
But those old tumble dryers, particularly the ones you get in laundromats, can be quite big.
I mean, they could fit Carla in there easily.
I bet she's had many a night in there.
That explains her hair.
Oh, that's canon, that is.
They've also stolen Sam's watch. And while Rebecca has escaped, she is still dizzy and her mascara is running, which is a nice attention to detail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sam says, we just need to get through bath time, to which one of the older lads...
Older lads, Ian,
he's ready for Rebecca's bath time.
It's very Animaniacs. Our nurse! It's unseemly. So Gino Tortelli was 7.5 as of late 1982. So we can determine that he was born in early 1975, which makes him 16?
Yeah, we're in 90 or 91 at this point.
91, so which makes him 16.
Which, you know, is a reasonable age for him to be thinking about girls.
Yeah, just this one's too old for you, Gino.
Yeah.
You're an unseemly boy.
He's just chancing his arm.
Yes.
So, yes, that's the end of, or the beginning of their terrible time putting everyone to bed. But we go back to the bar.
What I find interesting is that Gino somehow respects Sam, because after Gino's comments, Sam kind of goes, go on, get out of here, and sends him to another room. This is because Gino has known Sam since Gino was 2.5 years old.
Ah.
So maybe he's, you know... got some respect for him for knowing him this time.
Yeah. And also Sam is twice the size of him. So
that's
that
true.
might have some factor to play as well.
Sam's got the makings of a varsity athlete.
We now go back to the bar. And Cliff has equipped himself with a tripod. He is acting all the difficult director.
He calls Norm atmosphere.
He does. And Norm is invited to stay in the shot. Paul asks if he could be atmosphere, to which Cliff replies, personally, Paul, I love you, but the camera doesn't. Now scoot.
It's like the whole, you got a face for radio, kid.
Yeah. Such a harsh line, but it did make me laugh.
There are many takes.
Many takes. And I think Woody and particularly Kelly are getting very tired. And seeing this, Frasier jumps in to take over, gives all the reassuring vibes, like, you know, he's a much more caring replacement.
Yeah. Be natural. Just be yourselves. Just going to say hello to Woody's parents and it'll all be okay.
Yeah.
Where Cliff was looking for the energy of Take 36 and the innocence of Take 11. And Kelly whimpers, I think, is the correct phrase.
Yeah. Frasier gives a very dry glance over the camera and says, you just don't get it, do you? A few cutting lines in this episode.
The kids almost drown Sam during bath time.
Mm-hmm. There's a lovely ending scene, and particularly the way that Rebecca speaks her final line. It had me laughing out loud.
Well, Sam, we did it.
Hey, that's right. We passed your test, didn't we? We took care of Carla's kids. If we can do that, we can do anything. You know something? We're going to be just fine.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Uh-oh. Is that a prowler or is that the kids?
Oh, I hope it's a prowler.
No one played a woman on the edge of a breakdown quite like Kirstie Alley.
No, it's brilliant. And that's it. Cut to credits. I wonder what happened to them, James.
Well, we've got more episodes, so I'm assuming they're going to be fine. All right, Cliff, how's it going? Well, he's got an award and everything for best film.
Has he?
Yeah. He's trying to white balance my face, Barry. No, thank you, Cliff.
Scoot, Cliff, scoot.
As usual, before we open our letters, we have to give a shout-out to our norms on Patreon. So this goes out to Treb Curry. If you want that special norm treatment, then check out our Patreon page for that and so much more.
Let me just initiate this letter-opening sound effect. There we go. So, how many children are at Carla's house?
Seven.
And how many children overall?
In the world.
I will let you choose which one you answer. In Carla's family or in the world. Entirely up to you.
Oh, this is a trick question. And I'll tell you for why it's a trick question. Carla has eight children. But last we saw Anthony, him and his girlfriend or wife, young wife, was pregnant. So could be nine children. As Carla's descendants, but we only have seen eight of her children throughout the run of Cheers.
Yeah, I will give you half a point because you chose the wrong question to answer.
This is a big question. According to the Harvard Encyclopedia of American Ethnic Groups, which decade had the highest number of Irish immigrants into the US, with Malone being a proud old Irish name?
Ooh.
I can give you a clue.
Well, I would aim towards 20s, 30s or 50s. Am I close?
No.
Okay. 1860.
I mean, you're closer, but you're wrong. It's 1880s.
Oh, right. That's pretty close.
1860s is a good guess because most of the immigration was following the famine. The potato famine.
That's, yeah, of course, what I was thinking.
What events are on Freddy's calendar?
Oh, now this is a good question. So he has... No, it's gone. I think the Friday night was something like... Was it dancing or something?
You got Story Hour, Mummy and Me class, and Friday is Aquatots.
Aquatots. Nowhere near. Cliff was very insistent on getting his film absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
How many takes did they do overall?
59 was the take where Fraser took over.
That's very good. That's the answer I was looking for. 59 points.
I'm going to rake the total points for this season. Helps that I'm in every episode. Speaking of Cliff, who are his filmmaking idols?
Oh, he names three, and I remember the last one because Woody gives him a blank look. Mm-hmm. So Hitchcock was the last one.
Yes.
Old Hitch, I think he calls him.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other two, I seem to remember, had European names.
One of them is a European name.
Italian?
Yes.
Wasn't Coppola or someone, was it?
No, it was a good guess, but it's wrong. It's Kurosawa.
Mm. Is that Seventh Samurai?
The Seventh Samurai, yep. And Fellini is the Italian director you're thinking of.
Ah, okay. What did Fellini do?
Direct. he did La Dolce Vita, 8.5, La Strada, Amarcord, Knights of Cabiria, Roma, and E. Vitelloni. Vitelloni, yeah.
Very good.
What are the names of all eight of Carla's children? They're not all said in the episode, but I've said them all while talking to you.
Oh, you swine. This is like a Derren Brown episode.
Yeah.
Anthony.
Yeah.
Serafina.
Yeah.
Or, no, I think that's where I'm going to get lost.
No, you did well so far where you named them from oldest to youngest, but you did that with two of them.
Such a cutting compliment.
And then Gino, Anne-Marie, Lucia, Ludlow, Elvis, Jesse. Another message here. It's about a recommendation. on how to keep those pesky Tortelli children busy, and it's to give them a hobby. We've been doing this podcasting as a hobby thus far, very much enjoyed it. But what has made this hobby even more enjoyable and has made it even easier to bring these episodes to you is Zencastr. It's our podcasting recording platform or recording tool. It's very user-friendly. It's got its inbuilt audio processing to help us sound as delightful as we do. Generally, can't recommend it enough if anyone wishes to start their own podcast or any video conferencing. It's, you know, fun for all the family, basically. And if you go to zencastr.com/pricing, you can use the code NORM and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. We want you to have the same easy experiences, which Sam and Rebecca did not have in this episode. But if you want to have a much easier time for any content you wish to produce, then I recommend going to Zencastr because we want to hear what you have to say for your podcasts.
And that seems to bring us to time.
Yes. What shall we order?
Ooh, now that is a question. So what have we got? We've got films, we've got directing.
A shot, filming, eh?
Well, 59 shots, actually.
Yeah, go on then. 59 shots it is. Of what?
Southern Comfort.
Excuse me?
I don't know where Woody's from.
Oh,
is he sending it home to his
parents? That's a good one. He's from Indiana. It is a state in the Midwest. So it's not quite southern.
Is it southern from where they are? Even marginally?
Well, it's close, you know.
Is it?
But I think, yes, slightly southern.
So tenuously, are we going to go for 59 shots of Southern Comfort?
Yes. And then all our listeners will have to listen to the episode to understand why. Next week, John's going to come back and we're going to talk about a classic Cheers episode. And that will be fun for everyone.
Excellent. I look forward to it, James.
Talk to you again soon. Bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.